Straight Talk on WRHI-FM 100.1 and CN2 is presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Now here's Manning Kimmel broadcasting live from Substation 2 on Cherry Road in Rock Hill with Straight Talk, selected by the South Carolina Broadcasters Association as the state's top public affairs program.
And good afternoon. Welcome into Substation 2, Cherry Road, across the street from Winthrop, for another edition of our Straight Talk program, presented to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. And thanks to our co-sponsor today, Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant, and also to Piedmont Medical Center, a community built on care, PiedmontMedicalCenter.com. And not only do you have Manning Kimmel, because he was in the intro today, today is Friday, so you also have Ashley Lang, and we are visiting with South Carolina State Senator Wes Clymer.
He is
so
such
welcome.
A big figure. It takes two of us.
It does. We're going to tag team this. So thanks
Manning,
for being
Ashley,
here today,
thank
Wes.
You for joining together for the Inquisition. I'm ready to roll.
Are you ready?
Hey, let's go.
Okay. You want to start?
No, you go ahead.
Right ahead.
You jump in. You were on the intro today, so I'm going to let you jump in.
Okay. So we're going to start off with a softball.
Okay.
Softball question. You were, I think, the lone vote amongst our delegation on the Senate side to not want to see Curtis Loftus impeached.
Sure.
What's your reasoning behind that?
This was one of the more interesting debates that I've ever had to sort of listen to, because different senators took very different views around sort of the evidentiary standard that they wanted to apply to the circumstances. And the circumstance is that there was a $1.8 billion accounting discrepancy that accumulated over a series of years as a consequence of a accounting software change about a decade ago.
Right.
All right. So the reason why I was uncomfortable overturning the will of the people as expressed by an election is that there was enough ambiguity between the role of the treasurer and the role of the comptroller, and there was a certain amount of paper flow that substantiated the treasurer's position. I was uncomfortable throwing him out of office, basically telling the people that they hired the wrong person as a consequence. The treasurer is the state's banker. The comptroller is the state's accountant. This was an accounting discrepancy. It was not a banking problem. Actual money didn't go missing. It was an accounting problem. The General Assembly already fired the accountant, Richard Ekstrom, and I think some wish they could have fired Ekstrom twice. So they tried to fire Loftus. And ultimately, there was just, in my mind, insufficient evidence to throw Loftus out of office.
So what have we learned out of this to try to keep this from happening again?
Okay, that's the... Now, I do wish... I don't know... Express this privately, but the treasurer really did himself and the people of South Carolina no favors with the manner in which he handled this.
Right.
He was obstinate and went on the attack when instead everyone's focus should have been, what's the problem? How do we fix it? How do we make sure it never happens again? So among the recommendations from a independent third-party forensic accounting firm that the state hired to get to the bottom of this was to retain an independent oversight body to basically back check all of the books of the state on an ongoing basis. And so that is among the solutions here, is to add an additional layer of oversight, an additional layer of scrutiny on the books and records.
So as far as Loftus is concerned, I mean...
He's on the ballot again in 2026. He said he's going to run for re-election, and it'll be up for the people to decide. But I was uncomfortable making that choice for them.
Right. So there was not enough of a vote, two-thirds vote, on either body to
no,
get
the
it.
Senate had enough votes to throw him out, but the House leadership has indicated they're not going to take the matter up.
Okay. All right.
My turn?
Go ahead.
Okay. So South Carolina lawmakers are advancing House Bill 4163. It's a proposal to dissolve the South Carolina High School League. And we hear a lot about the High School League and sports and NIL and the portal. What are your thoughts with replacing it with a new state-run organization that would be called the South Carolina High School Athletic Association? He's taking a deep breath.
Another senator once observed to me that taking over the high school league is roughly akin to invading Iraq. The General Assembly certainly possesses the power to topple the government. But do you really want to be there for the occupation? And that made a lot of sense to me. All right. But as it relates to the high school league, and the reason there's so much, you know, anxiety around the high school league is that it is really obvious to even a casual observer of their behavior that far too often their decisions are designed for the benefit of the adults in the system as opposed to the children in the system. And that's a major problem. The only reason we have sports is because of the values that they inculcate in our youth. Teamwork, hard work, so on and so forth, right? That's why we do it. That's why we have extracurriculars. They're extra to the main thing, and the main thing is an education. So the high school league tends to think of itself more like the NFL or the NBA, right, where they're making big-time sports decisions, and they lose focus on the thing that actually matters, which is the moral welfare of our youth. That's really all we're about here. And so when constituents across the state feel injured and wronged by the high school league's focus on what's better for the adults than what's right for the children, it gives rise to efforts like these to topple the high school league and replace it with something else.
So you're not in favor of it?
I haven't studied this particular bill. I'll fall back on, I mean, yes, it's totally fine to, you know, you can definitely throw out the high school league, but the question is, what are you going to replace it with, and what are the rules going to be, and how are you going to structure it differently that yields more favorable outcomes, again, for the children in the system, not the adults?
Probably one of the more important pieces of legislation got through the Senate, and that's the energy bill.
Yeah.
That now is a fait accompli. It's done. And we're going to be
ratified yesterday.
It was ratified yesterday. And so here we go. We're actually going to start dealing with this pending energy problem that we have here in South Carolina. You all have been so successful in attracting so many people to this state, so many new industries, that we're beginning to see the what could be a lack of enough power to run it all.
So the energy bill was a significant piece of legislation. The main parts were it authorized the construction of a new combined cycle gas plant in the low country that'll be a joint build between Dominion and Santee Cooper. And, you know, that's really not – we're not really served by Dominion and Santee Cooper other than the co-ops. York Electric Co-op, for example, buys their electricity from Santee Cooper. So we'll be buying some of the electrons out of that system. The thing I think is, I don't know, the best part about the bill is the permitting reforms. For far too long, our system of permitting large energy projects has been overly complex, overly burdensome, takes too long, right? And we all know that time is money, right? And so the cost and complexity of the permitting process gets passed on to consumers in the form of higher costs that they have to pay for through their electricity rates. And so the permitting reforms in this bill basically set a shot clock on permitting for large energy projects. So it compels the government agencies involved in the permitting and the court system that hears complaints about the permitting to expedite everything related to large-scale energy projects, which will save at least tens of millions, perhaps hundreds of millions, over the course of multiple different projects.
So this big coal plant conversion that's going to be going to natural gas down there in the Lowcountry, is that all state regulated, or does it have to be looked at the federal level as well?
The state's environmental authority, or the permitting authority, is a delegated authority from the federal government. So you have to, each state that has this delegated authority has to abide, you know, Clean Water Act, Clean Air Act standards. Basically, the state is the authorizer, the permitter, and the enforcer of federal statute in this case. So there are certain minimum federal thresholds that we can hit, but the idea is to claw back everything we can to make it easier at the state level.
So what does this energy bill do in regards to, if anything, with the VC Summer Plant, which is now getting some more attention because of the need for energy, number one, the new technologies that are out there, and quite frankly, you know, Rick Lee, who serves as the chair of the governor's Nuclear Advisory Commission, decided I'm going to take a little field trip.
Yeah, brought back pictures.
And what he brought back was, hey, this is all brand new gear. Mm-hmm. It's in great shape. We need to figure out a way to do this thing.
Ratepayers have already paid for it. Yep. Yeah. And there is a growing interest in resurrecting the, you know, failed new build reactor at VC Summer by a lot of the tech firms. So in where's 3 Mile Island? Is it Pennsylvania, New Jersey?
I think so.
New York, anyway. Microsoft partnered with authorities up there to resurrect that nuclear site, and there is a desire among, Google, Meta, Amazon, DC Block, QTS, you know, these large users of electricity for technology. There may be a possibility for a group of them to band together and put together the capital required to complete the VC Summer nuclear plant. And with a lot of questions remain. I mean, your ratepayers have already put $12 billion into that thing.
Oh, yeah.
So balancing the capital inputs and who gets the output of the electrons is an important part of this equation. But that conversation was, nobody thought, everybody thought VC Summer was just dead, 6 feet under a few years ago. But now, because of the staggering increase in our aggregate energy demand as a consequence of this explosion of AI and all the rest, it breathes new life into a project like VC Summer. I really hope it happens.
Well, and unfortunately, it takes too doggone long to get all the permits approved by the federal government, because you get nuclear. That's
and that was a big part of the problem that drove the failure of VC Summer the first time.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think people have blinders on if they don't think nuclear is going to be part of a solution to any kind of energy, pending energy crisis.
Nuclear is essential.
Well, it runs very well up here at Catawba. Mm-hmm. I mean, Duke designs them, builds them, and operates them. Pretty good track record.
Yep.
Very good track record. And you get a company.
And there's already a reactor operating at VC Summer.
Oh, yeah.
This is just adding two new units.
That's exactly.
All right. All right, my turn?
Your turn.
We're ping-ponging back and forth. Okay, so
can
I'm
going to... Can you
handle
it?
I think we're good.
It gets to be too much stress. Let me know.
So I'm going to go back to schools and education. Yeah. So we've also heard a lot about school of choice and vouchers. Mm-hmm. What is your stance on school of choice, and how are we going to start moving forward as a state?
Okay, so I have long been a proponent of maximum choice for parents. Right. Nobody knows better what schooling environment their children need to be in than the mom and dad. Right. And so regardless of income, my view is that every parent ought to be able to send their child to whatever school they want to. So the General Assembly this year enacted an expanded version of school choice. Supporters of school choice, like me, call it school choice. Opponents call it vouchers. So let's just call it it is, vouchers.
Okay.
And it's a $7,500 voucher. That is in this upcoming year available for people at 300% of the federal poverty level and below. So for a family of four, that's about $120,000. And then in next year and every year thereafter, it's available for families at 500% of federal poverty and below. So that's $180,000 and below. That'll cover 85% of South Carolina families in terms of eligibility.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
And it will allow those parents to make what, in their view, is the best choice for their child's education.
But how does this work when you have, let's just use the Fort Mill School District.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very, very successful school district, pretty well maxed out. They have to build a new school almost every year to handle the population. Mm-hmm. If I decide I want to go to the Fort Mill School District, do I have a right just to get in there?
So, we got to draw a distinction between vouchers and inter-district transfers.
Ah.
Right.
Okay. Inter-district transfers were contemplated in the bill, and those decisions will be left to local school districts.
Okay.
But you also get some hairy cross lines where, and going back to what we just asked you about with the high school league, because they are trying to propose that you can have a one transfer fee for athletes, and how is that going to all mix in with school of choice as well?
So the Department of Education is in the process of promulgating, basically regulations around some of the finer points of exactly actually what you just asked about. You know, how specifically do the inter-district transfers work in districts that want to do it? And so I represent people in three different school districts. Mm-hmm. And all three of those school districts take a completely different view on the merits of inter-district transfers. Some want it, some don't, some will do it, some will not, right? The Department of Education, over the next few months, will itemize in great detail specifically the mechanics of how inter-district transfers work if a district chooses to do so.
Okay. And then going back to the voucher piece,
yeah,
that is more for
private
mm-hmm. institutions, not charter or public.
Correct.
All right. And with that, we're going to go ahead and take our mid-program break and remind everyone that you're listening to Straight Talk live from Substation 2, Cherry Road, across the street from Winthrop, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. And thanks to our co-sponsor today, Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant, and Good Pharmacy, your hometown pharmacy, Ebenezer Road at Camden Avenue in Rock Hill. Okay, what we do here is special at Substation 2. We make fresh subs and salads 6 days a week from 10 in the morning till 9 at night. And again, how we do it is special. We want everyone out there to know what we do, and it's right here on these white letters. So on the count of three, let's tell them. 1, 2, 3.
Slice, slice, slice. Slice. Garden, 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 garden.
If it's 12:30, it's Straight Talk on WRHI and CN2.
What's hot at Substation 2? The new hot beef brisket sandwich. Brisket is smoked tender beef sliced to order, served hot and delicious, and gardened your way. This is a limited time offer, so titillate your taste buds today with a hot beef brisket sandwich at Substation 2, Cherry Road, across from Winthrop.
When disaster strikes, one of the most important things is getting life back to normal. A little compassion can go a long way. Paul Davis is here for you. Paul Davis is committed to handling any property damage with exceptional care, because what we do is about more than property. It's about people. We have the training and expertise necessary to completely restore your property fast. For all your cleanup and restoration needs, call the experts at Paul Davis Restoration at 329-1140 or find us online at pauldavisrockhill.com.
Dr. Carrie Watson, the trauma medical director at Piedmont Medical Center, says she's very proud of what's being accomplished at Piedmont.
We are able to do robotic surgery. We are a robotic center of excellence, and that's robotic surgery for general surgery like gallbladders, hernias, colon. We also have robotic urology, so that's things like kidney removals and things with your bladder. We also have robotic neurosurgery that we're doing, and that's pretty amazing. Not a lot of places have that.
Piedmont Medical Center, a community built on care.
Now, parts of Western York County can enjoy Comporium's advanced internet technology every day. Thanks to the partnership between Comporium and York Electric Cooperative, parts of Western York County now have access to Comporium fiber technology that gives you the ability to stream, download, search, and conference quickly and reliably. Not only is Comporium fiber fast, it's also affordable, starting at just $49.99 per month with no connection fee. For details, go online to Comporium.link/YEC to sign up for Comporium high-speed internet today.
Love our subs? Want to find the fastest way to get here? Just say, "Hey Siri, take me to Substation 2 in Rock Hill."
Substation 2 on Cherry Road in Rock Hill, and it gets 4 stars on Yelp.
Even faster, order online at mysubstationii.com. Cherry Road, across from Winthrop.
Straight Talk on WRHI-FM 100.1 and CN2 is brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders.
And we are back live here at Substation 2, Cherry Road, across the street from Winthrop, and we are chatting with South Carolina State Senator Wes Clymer. I'm Ashley Lang, and Manning Kimmel is also here.
All right. So, Senator, you've been very involved, as has the delegation, in trying to do what you can to upgrade our roads and upgrade our intersections. Mm-hmm. The State Infrastructure Bank has been very helpful in providing a whole bunch of money. I think we got, what was it, $75 million here a year or two ago to do a bunch of intersections?
So the original Infrastructure Bank application, which was approved, let's say, 2019, 2018, 2019,
could've
something
been.
Like that.
Yeah.
It's been a little while, was to redo all but one of the interchanges in between Celanese Road and the North Carolina line.
Right.
So really what we're talking about is Carowinds, 160, and then the Celanese Cherry interchange.
All right. So here we are, the Celanese Cherry project. That is a big, big interchange.
It's
a lot of money.
It's the busiest one in York County, busiest, one of the busiest in the state.
All right. And I am sure, without even getting into detail, that you're finding that it's going to cost you a lot more than has been allocated for the project.
a whole lot more, because with road projects, and this is true nationally, it's certainly true in South Carolina, you know, we have, you know, BC and AD, right? Well, yeah. With road projects, you have, you know, pre-COVID and post-COVID.
Oh, yes.
Right.
Double.
Everything has doubled, at least, as a consequence of, you know, everything that happened during the pandemic and then the subsequent spike in inflation.
Sure.
So we're now in a situation where the amount of money allocated by the infrastructure bank plus what RFATS has put up plus what the county has put up is insufficient to complete the Exit 82 project. That's the Celanese Cherry project. And so there's the county has an application before the infrastructure bank, which will be considered on Monday, requesting to move some of the funds that were originally allocated to Carowinds to instead be spent on Exit 82, the Celanese Cherry interchange, so that that can be accomplished while we then work on compiling the funds necessary to do work on Exit 90.
So Exit 90 is a distant in the future type of project?
It is, and on the merits of traffic count and congestion and all the rest, it is less acute of a problem relative to the Celanese Cherry interchange. I mean, that is one of the worst ones from a safety standpoint, from a congestion standpoint, additional time for commuters, all the rest. That's the one that really needs to get fixed before the Carowinds does.
So how big is the shortfall or the shortage? I mean,
so we're asking to allocate, move $45 million down from Exit 90 to Exit 82. And I believe the Exit 82 project, for purposes of what I believe our baseline now is $106
million. $106 million to do the project?
Yes.
And you need the $45 to add to the $106
no,
or
no,
to make
to,
it
to
hard?
Add to the existing funds on the project.
Okay. The $75 million.
Yeah. So to accomplish that, you have to get
they get what? Permission from the Infrastructure Bank.
The Infrastructure Bank.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a lot of pottle ticking. I mean, how do you do this?
Well, the purpose of the Infrastructure Bank in a test tube is to divorce large infrastructure projects from the political process, right? So you have an independent board.
Right.
It's not legislators voting on it. It's not the chairman of the Finance Committee. It's not the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee. It's an independent board. But our job as representatives of York County is to make sure they have the facts, they understand the why, and they understand the merits, right? And then I trust, you know, these are smart folks who make good decisions. Hey, they awarded us the money in the first place. Great decision, right? So, but it's just making sure they have the facts and the knowledge of the project and also understand the commitment from every level of local government in York County to accomplishing this as economically and as quickly as possible.
Do you expect opposition from those who are working on the Exit 90 project?
I don't think there's opposition on that, no.
And how do you make sure that the projects move quickly? Because I would assume that you wouldn't want 77 to turn in like into an 85 that has just been constantly, yeah. I mean, it's been going through construction ever since I've been alive, I feel like. So how do you manage that piece of it?
So the good news is this is a much simpler project. However complicated it is, it's much simpler than all the work that's going on I-85. But the faster we get started, the quicker we get, you know, start moving cranes out there and doing all that work, the cheaper it's going to be. The longer we wait, the more expensive it's going to be.
So this could be a quick decision? I mean, they could make the decision in a week?
The decision be made on Monday.
On Monday. Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, then we go ahead and move forward with the next step in whatever Big 82 project is.
Exactly.
People need to keep in mind, though, this project, if it gets the funding, it's still going to take 7, 8, 9 years.
It takes a long time.
To get it
yeah.
done.
Mm-hmm.
Design work, I mean, it's just amazing. All right, so let me ask you about a couple other things. I'll take an easy one for you, because this is not in your district and does not involve you, but it's certainly getting a lot of press and involves Silphad Solar. And my interest in this, I mean, my interest in it is the pending piece of legislation that Senator Martin has put down there, Representative Martin, pardon me, in Columbia, which has been endorsed by Senator Johnson, which would allow basically a zoning classification that has been granted to be reversed after the project had already started. I don't know whether that legislation has any legs or whether it could, but it seems to me if it passed, it could really open up Pandora's box.
So you mentioned two of the sponsors of the bill. They're attorneys. I'm not an attorney, so take my constitutional opining with a grain of salt.
You're one of the very few down there, right?
But it would seem to me that if that set of facts were to play out, it would probably constitute a taking, and takings are prohibited by the Constitution.
Without compensation.
Without compensation, right? So then that really becomes a question of who pays and how much.
And it would be a bunch of money.
Yeah.
All right.
But I don't. I mean, perhaps the legislation contemplates that, or perhaps that's part of this decision making. I will say that as it relates to that project, some simple observations can be made. One, school districts and counties and municipalities need to work much more cooperatively on the planning portion of where we're going to locate schools. Because my understanding is that area was zoned light industrial when the school district made the choice to locate the school there. And so perhaps that should have been contemplated. Perhaps that should have played a role in, you know, preventing the circumstances that we're in right now. So better coordination from at the local level on zoning and planning would go a long way to mitigating a situation like this from happening again.
Okay, budget. The budget is passed, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The new tax rates are part of that budget, correct?
Yes. And down from six, it expedites the reduction from down to six. The flat 6% would be the highest marginal tax rate.
But that's going to, is it also staged to go down to 3.9 at some point?
That it was proposed in the House.
Right.
And the Senate will take up another tax cut bill next year.
Do you think eventually we'll get to a point where we don't have...
My goal is to eliminate the income tax altogether.
Yeah. Which would be quite something.
Yes.
Yeah. Right, something. Very
Thank
nice.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. I got to ask you, I told you about this before. We all were together over at Winthrop for the big Eagle Club gathering.
Yeah.
It was very warm inside of McBride Hall. And I got the chance to say, why is it so warm? And I got told, well, the state procurement code is so messed up that even though we have money to fix it, when we send in a bid to be approved, it takes 12 to 18 months to get it approved. And by the time they get that back, the price has gone up. And so we have to repeat the process over and over again. It's costing the state, costing Winthrop, costing everybody unnecessary money.
Yeah. It's a really dumb system. So I'll make two observations about this. One, on the final day of session yesterday, the Senate gave third reading to an SC DOGE, Department of Government Efficiency bill. And this is exactly the kind of thing they need to go after. So there's one. Two, the reason our procurement code is the way it is because a former legislator who was the chairman of the Finance Committee for a long time thought of the procurement code as his baby. And no one's allowed to touch it. I've tried to change this thing multiple times, and you were not allowed to touch it.
He's not there anymore.
He's not there anymore. It's time to do it. The purpose of the procurement code is you got to acknowledge that the dollars don't belong to you. They belong to the people. And so there's got to be more checks and balances on the expenditure of those funds, you know, to prevent kickbacks, to prevent bribery, so on and so forth, right? I have to believe it is possible to have a procurement code that simultaneously prevents corruption and prevents stupidity. Because the system we have now, which you've just described, in particular the plight of Winthrop and their air conditioner units, is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And it's got to change.
Same thing happened with the Burns Auditorium.
Yeah.
I mean, Winthrop had to, you know, dive into its own operating capital to get that project done.
Yeah.
All right, I hear the music. That means it's.
Did you do okay? You did all right.
Yeah, you did good.
You did all right.
You're going to beat me up too bad.
No. Well, thank you both for being here. Straight Talk is brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. And our sponsor, Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. And one more time, we're going to tell everybody what we do here at Substation 2, what makes us special. On the count of three, one, two, three.
Slice, slice, slice.
Garden, garden, garden. See you on the radio next week. Bye.